Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to RNIB Tech Talk. Yes, we are back for another week of talking, well, everything tech. I'm Hubert Pavelkovich, back from my holiday. And, well, when one person comes back from a holiday, another person goes on theirs. Callum Stoneman is not here this week. He's on a very much deserved holiday of his own. Don't worry, though, he will be back next week. Until then, it's me, Hubert Pavelkovich, holding on to the show for you, looking after the show. And let me tell you what we've got coming up this week. We are hearing about new medical research into the study of the eye, which will be quite interesting. Also, Amelia Hilton has been finding out about a prototype for an accessible pregnancy test. Plus, one listener will be telling us about her journey and her use of technology. That's coming up for you and plenty more besides. Joining me is our co-host, Jackie Brown. Jackie, it's just me and you. What's on your tech radar?
Okay, so this week I came across an app which is available on both iOS and Android, and it's called Bedtime Donations. And it has been developed by the Royal Society for Blind Children, RSBC. And what it is, it's a very accessible app. You go into it and accept the terms and conditions and the fact that your phone will need to use the microphone. And you can either, this is for young children, and you can either download or search for bedtime stories read by some famous authors or some famous celebrities, or you can go in and read your own story to your children and record it. And if your recording is good, then they will sort of, you know, make sure everything's edited properly, and they will upload it so that your child actually gets your voice. So for example, if you know one of your parents is working late and you have a young child and they want their bedtime story, but mommy or daddy isn't around to read it to them, then you can go into the Bedtime Donations app. And if your mommy or daddy has uploaded their voice reading a story, then you can listen to that, and it makes it available to other people so that everybody gets something. And it means that, you know, there is a whole world out there of young people's stories to be told and waiting to be listened to. I think it's a great idea. I tried the app, and yes, it definitely works. You can go in and choose categories. So if you like adventure or mystery, or, you know, really for young children as well. So I think this is a free app, and it's a really nice thing for very young children, I would say. But of course, if you're a big kid, there's nothing wrong in listening to a child's story either.
You could just be young at heart. I mean, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that at all. Sometimes you just can't beat an old school classic, I think.
Exactly.
New Meta glasses, they're out. And so you've got a few different versions here. The ones I've been looking at are the Ray-Ban Metas Gen 2. But I think what I've noticed a lot is some people have been underwhelmed in particular by the new Ray-Ban Meta Gen 2s. So they have released the Oakley versions. They've got glasses with a display as well. But one thing that seems missing from the new version of the Ray-Ban Meta glasses, at least not that I've seen, Jackie, you may have seen something else here, but there's no water-resistant version of the Ray-Ban Metas. The few main features I've seen are, of course, better video and better battery life. Have you seen anything different on that, Jackie?
I've only heard that there is better battery life, as you say, better video, and actually better speakers in them, so that the audio side of it is better as well. But other than that, I there's nothing about it that event that would make me rush out and buy the Gen 2. I guess there are so many wearables all competing with each other and competing with features. I think it has to be remembered as well that the Meta Ray-Bans, whatever ones you buy, they are a mainstream product. So the software isn't being specifically written for a blind or visually impaired person to use when wearing the glasses. Unlike, say, Envision's Ally Solos glasses that are going to hit the shelves, well, in the blindness community anyway, in, say, late October, that software is being written specifically with us in mind, whereas the Metas are not. It's a very mainstream product. Very interesting all the same. I certainly do like trying my Meta glasses on certain things, and that's the ones I've had since 2024. So, but I'm not going to be tempted, definitely not, by the new generation, because at the moment there is just so much going on in that field that it's probably best to wait a little while. And there are also Siva glasses that are supposed to be in the works as well. So there's a lot happening in wearable technology, and I actually think, I don't know about you, Hubert, but I think it's actually moved away a little bit from the watch. Yes, at the Apple event, there were new watches announced, but I think the wearable technology seems to be going to glasses, smart glasses, and that kind of range of products rather than watches. I know Android do a smart watch. But I think the glasses situation, you've got Google glasses coming out. You've got, I think they're doing something with Samsung glasses as well. So there is a real emphasis at the moment, anyway, on eye wearables.
Yeah, and I mean, I think there are two different types of wearables, really. Your watch is a bit different to what your glasses will offer. So I think it's moving away. So the fact that there are two very different entities that are responsible for probably few different things in comparison. For me, I'm not going to be rushing out to get the new Ray-Ban Meta because I like the new Ray-Ban design. But I think my thing is until I see weather resistance. A similar kind of price tag of the Ray-Ban glasses.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be rushing out, so I'm a little bit disappointed on that front. I like the improvements they have introduced, but the lack of water resistance certainly disappointed me in that sense. But yes, what do you think? What are your thoughts on the Meta glasses or anything else you'd like to share tech-wise? This is your show. We want to hear from you, our listeners, about what do you think? What tech is currently making a difference? What technology is frustrating you? Or what technology would you like some advice about? And we will try and help. And there's a magic email address you can email to do so. It's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Stick around, it's Tech Talk. Now on Tech Talk, Leah Shanahan has developed a prototype for an accessible pregnancy test. Our Amelia Hilton has been learning more.
University of Limerick graduate Leah Shanahan has created a pregnancy test for blind and partially sighted people. It's called AIMEE and it delivers results through touch, sight and sound and is the first of its kind. She's here today to tell us more. Hi Leah, thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
So what was your initial inspiration for working on this project?
I did this project as part of my final year project in college. So I studied product design and technology in the University of Limerick in Ireland. So I initially started off as part of that project, what we have to do is come up with kind of a problem area and try and find solutions for issues in that problem area. So for me, I went into kind of inaccessibility for blind or partially sighted people in women's healthcare. So to start with that process, I got in contact with four blind women, and it was through speaking with them and hearing about their experiences that I heard about the fact that they don't have access to pregnancy test results independently, and that's what inspired this project.
Can you highlight some of the key features of traditional pregnancy tests aside from the indicator itself being very visual that you wanted to address with AIMEE?
So, of course, the traditional pregnancy tests, blind and visually impaired women aren't able to access the results because they're entirely visual. But also, another issue that I found from speaking with these women was even just taking a urine sample, that can be a really difficult process, is a big issue for them as well.
And can you talk us through how Amy works and what the experience of using it is like from start to finish?
So with Amy, essentially how it works is it uses a saliva-based pregnancy test, which is a technology that already exists out there. And the way it works is you put your little disposable test, the part that actually does the testing, you put that into a reader, and then you take your sample, you take your saliva sample, it reads the test for you inside of the reusable reader part, and then at the end of that reader, a tactile minus or plus sign will come up depending on your result. And then also you can connect it to your phone so that you can have access to a web page with large graphics and visuals and also screen reader compatibility. So there's kind of three ways to tell what your results are. ORNIB did a kind of a prototype project similar enough to my own a few years ago. Now there was aspects of it like it was only a tactile result and it was still a urine sample and it was a single-use one. So there was aspects of it that I kind of wanted to step away from, but it was again like another really exciting project and a really exciting step forward in like the space of hopefully if enough people try this out, eventually something will stick and eventually something will move forward.
That's really brilliant. So flexible for depending on what people are used to. And what kind of feedback have you got so far from people that have seen or tried out the product?
I mean, very positive results all around, especially, I continually throughout the project went back to, the women that I spoke to in the beginning and asked them what they thought of the solution that I'd come up with. And, having multiple means of receiving the results, at least for them, seemed to be a really positive way of going about it because, you never know, like one of the women that I spoke with had low sensitivity in her fingertips. So she didn't know Braille. She couldn't read Braille because she had such low sensitivity in her fingertips. So a tactile result may not have been suitable for her. So it was nice to like know that I was kind of covering a lot of bases and that hopefully people would be able to access the results regardless of their abilities.
And like you said, the independence factor is so important, and you're helping people enforce their rights to be able to learn healthcare results completely independently, and that's really, really exciting.
That was the part of this whole project that I like, really stood out to me. Like, as far as accessing pregnancy test results goes, blind or partially sighted women are the only group of women who are completely excluded from that experience. Every other person, for the most part, can receive pregnancy test results and be the first person to know what their pregnancy status is. And it was just kind of like, it really highlighted like the lack of autonomy blind or partially sighted women have in that space if they can't access those results independently.
And like you say, you're kind of bringing together, absolutely. And what are your hopes for Amy as a project continuing?
At the moment, it's proof of concept, and it's a very early stage product. I know that it would work, and I know I've gotten verification from both like electrical engineers and the users themselves that this is a product that would work. So in that sense, it exists, but it's so hard to move forward with a project with something like this as an independent person. Going forward with like a medical device and a diagnostic tool completely independently can be kind of a tough thing to do. But as far as like, continuing to talk about it and spreading awareness and kind of like getting this sort of, you can design for people with specific disabilities and you should, and it's exciting and there are ways forward. And if anyone ever wanted to take this further, or if there was a way for me to take this further, I would love to.
Absolutely, and that's a perfect segue into the best way for people to learn more about you, get in touch, and stay updated. So, where can they do that?
Well, if you wanted to keep up with anything related to this project, the best place to see that would be my LinkedIn. My name is Leah Shanahan. So if you wanted to search me up on that, that's probably the best way to see any more updates about this project.
Well, thank you so much, Leah Shanahan, the creator of Amy, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Our David Hogg has been finding out about some new research about improving the lab models of the human eye, which has just received some new funding. Today we're joined by Melinda Lacko, Professor of Stem Cell Sciences at Newcastle University, to discuss some recent research into improving lab models of the human eye called retinal organoids to help develop better treatments. Professor Lacko, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure, David. Thanks for having me in your programme.
First of all, how did this project come about?
This project has been on the go for about 12 years now. In early 2010, a Japanese colleague discovered the retinal organoids. These are mini lab models of the retina, and for the other than using animal models, we do not have good complex models of retina in the lab, and therefore this discovery of retinal organoids was seminal for the field. And we started immediately after generating those mini retinas or lab retinas. And the key point is that they contain all the various cell types that the adult retina has. They connect to each other and they're light responsive. So we can shine light into them and we can get electrical signals generated. The usefulness of those retinas for research is immense. We can ask questions of how retinas develop, and therefore having this retinal organoid in the lab, we can see the development of various cell types. Secondly, we can study disease because we can create those retinal organoids from everyone, whether they harbor or not a mutation in specific genes that make the retina function well. And therefore, we can test whether dysfunction occurs. Thirdly, we can use them for drug discovery or repurposing, because we can make hundreds and thousands of those organoids in the lab, and then we can test various drugs on them. And fourth, we can produce cells for transplantation. Let's say in a patient, some cell types in the retina are completely gone. We can produce those in retinal organoids and hopefully be able to transplant them to replace the lost cells. So this is, in a nutshell, the research that my lab and several other labs worldwide have been doing in the last 12 years. But those retinas are not entirely perfect, the ones we produce in the lab, and therefore we wanted to improve them. And that's where this new proposal comes about. In the retinas that are in our eyes, we do have vasculature, so have blood cells, and we have immune cells. And those immune cells are very important because if any of our retinal cells dies, they can go and eat it up and take away the debris. They can activate various metabolic processes in the retina, which is essential for retinal function. So in the new project, we wanted to improve, let's say wanted to create generation two of retinal organoids, where we introduce the immune cells and we introduce the blood vessels into the retina to be able to better mimic the adult retina.
And this has come about in part due to a grant from the organisation Fight for Sight. How important have they been in helping you to build on your research within these last 12 years?
Fight for Sight has been an excellent charity that supported our research throughout. For example, in the beginning, they supported the generation of retinal organoids when we started. They've also funded us for several disease mechanisms. For example, we had a gene which edits the genetic information in retinal cells, named PRPF31. They were able to fund us for 3 years to generate a model and find out what the main pathomechanism of the disease is. And those three-year grants, they've allowed us to generate preliminary data for bigger grants and for moving to the next steps. For example, going back to this PRPF31, the editor of information in retina, we've been able to go either to the Medical Research Council or another charity, Retina UK, to develop either better models or gene therapy, which basically adds the correct form of PRPF31 in the retina and make the retina function again. So it's almost like building a castle step by step and floor by floor, but the Fight for Sight has generally provided the foundations of those projects, allowing us to move further and to come closer to clinical translations.
So what kind of benefits could this research have and these retinal organoids have for people living with sight loss?
There are several benefits that are going to come out of this. With our models, we are also working towards finding early biomarkers of the disease, so finding specific proteins, metabolites, or genes that we can routinely test. And for example, when people go to their optician, they'll get their vision tested, they'll get pictures of the back of the eye. Our idea is that they might be able to give a blood or urine sample where we can test much earlier than the disease develops. For example, for age-related macular degeneration, this develops after the age of 75. The idea is that we can pick up signs of AMD much earlier, and therefore people might be able to change their lifestyle, might be able to take complex vitamins that will help to prevent further disease progression and therefore maintain better sight for much longer time in the old age. Drug repurposing or drug discovery is also going to help families, for example, that know about a particular mutation in a specific gene, again, to stop retinal cells from dying, or with gene therapy to be able to put back the correct protein, as I said before, but in much earlier stages of the disease where the retinal cells are still there. Again, this will help people to maintain their sight, but also cell-based transplantation. There are a couple of clinical trials ongoing at the minute for people with AMD. So the idea is that we would put back a few what we call contralateral receptor cells that mediate this high acuity vision in the center of the retina, in the macula. This will really be revolutionary because the incidence of this condition is quite high. You know, it can help a lot of people that currently go and take intraocular injections every 8 weeks in the hospital, and will also reduce the burden on the NHS. So there are multiple benefits from the science, but obviously, you know, have to go further before this all can be a reality.
Absolutely. Well, with that in mind, my final question for you is, what is next? You've got this new grant coming up from Fight for Sight in October. So what is coming up?
Well, for this grant, we are trying several approaches because it's quite complex. We have to generate the vascular and the immune cells and then find a way to introduce them into our retinal model without disrupting their function. And this is quite heavy task in front of us. We've already started trying a couple of approaches. I think the beauty of this is that with these approaches, we hope that not only to improve our retinal organoid model, but also to create some models of what we call retina blood barrier function. Those barriers are very important because they protect the retina. However, in disease, they can get disrupted, allowing substances and cells that shouldn't be there be there. In parallel, I think as a sideline to this grant, we hope very much that we can develop those barriers, and those barriers then can be used for drug testing. Because a lot of the drugs we're discovering for the retina, although they're useful in the retinal model, we need to know if they cross the barrier. This is very important for the way we administer them, because if they don't cross the barrier, you have to go with the injections into the eye. But if they cross the barrier, you can give them systemically via pill. And so there will be side benefits to this project we'll be developing, and we are looking forward to reporting them too.
Professor Lacko from Newcastle University, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you again. Thanks, David.
Now, Hubert has been on holiday and he is now back, of course. And I want to know, Hubert, what tech you were using while you were away on holiday, and was there anything techy that really helped you in any way?
So there's probably two things. One quite a small one, but made quite a difference, and one major one. So I'll start with a small one where I've tried the United Airlines app. So I was flying with United Airlines to Washington, Dallas to get my connecting flight. And I thought this time I will actually input my booking details into the United Airlines app, because I'm old school in the sense that I like to go to a travel agent to book my trips away, just purely because there's just so many things I don't understand. So I get them to do it and they give me a paper ticket and that's all fantastic. But I wanted to put it into the app and see what experience I get. Now, I didn't try all the functions of the app, but what I particularly loved, because when you're in an airport and you've sat down, you're busy chatting, you've checked in, you're just sitting there waiting for your flight. And what I liked is that the United Airlines app was giving me notifications of the gates for all my flights, which was fantastic, especially when the gates changed. I thought it was valuable because although, yes, the airport assistants should know that and they will announce it.
They don't always, though, do they? They don't.
No, you get that extra reassurance, though. And if your flight's delayed, which my connecting flight was, it also tells you. So I was relieved to be able to have access to all that information, which I think was brilliant. That was a small thing. The big thing for me, We've mentioned this obviously at the beginning of the show. It's the Meta glasses. Don't get me wrong, I found them very useful in the UK. However, they helped me massively on my holiday during various parts. You know, anything from taking photos and videos to share on social media to using the, you know, hands-free messaging and calling when I was walking long distances. But what really made a difference is going into restaurants in America and going into shops and just using the look and tell features to read menus and without having to kind of find staff to help me. Don't get me wrong, I did sometimes clarify things with them, but it was just that little ability to be more independent and go, I can read this menu, and then I can just simplify the process by asking the staff, can I have this? It says you've got it on your menu. Shopping as well was made considerably easier. So I went to a few coffee shops to buy some ground coffee because they have quite a choice in where I went. And again, being able to look at the coffee bags and being able to ask my glasses, what are the profile flavors of this coffee? Because that's what I kind of look at. You know, I bought some coffee from Nicaragua, which had notes of black cherry, for example. Lovely as it is, I managed to find all of this out using the Meta glasses independently. And I could just take it to the counter, kindly ask for them to ground the to have the coffee ground for me. And it was that simple. And I've impressed some people with these glasses when I went for some whiskey distillery tours. And some of these are quite niche, very small companies, very small, you know, two people that make it, for example. And I think they asked me, you know, can these glasses recognize what's on the bottle, what's written on the bottle labels? And they gave me a bottle and asked me to recognize it. And what I would do is ask the glasses what's on the bottle, and it would read the label. And I'd then read it to them and I said, is this correct? And again, they were very impressed. They said, you know, your glasses have guessed correctly what it said. So to me, the glasses just made everything simpler. But the big thing is they made me more independent, which to me was, it was a life changer.
Wow. Yeah, that's really interesting. And, you know, especially being able to do things on your own, you know, with the help of the glasses. What was your travel experience like in the airport? You know, did you get you obviously booked assistance, I'm assuming. Was the actual booking and all the assistants meeting you, you didn't have any issues with that? Because that's, you know, very often why so many people with sight loss are reluctant to travel, because they, you know, they maybe are not as familiar or competent with technology. So therefore, they have to rely on staff to get them from gate to gate, aircraft to luggage, and getting your luggage. Did you put any air tags in it or anything?
So tech-wise, I've had two solutions for this. AirTag is definitely one of them. I had it hidden in one of my shoes in my suitcase. I doubted anyone would be able to get into my suitcase because I had a padlock on it. But still, it's always useful to have an AirTag. I think you hear all sorts of horror stories about your luggage being lost or not coming with you. So an AirTag is simple to do it. I've attached some silver ribbons to have it recognizable visually. But another thing I've done, and I've had this life hack given to me when I flew 2 years ago independently for the first time, is take a photo with my phone of my suitcase before I travel. That way, if someone goes, you know, what does your suitcase look like? So I can find it, because some of them can be quite similar and you can accidentally grab the wrong one. It's happened to me before. So I can then take out my phone and show them the photo and go, this is it. But you can improve on this even further. What I've done is set the photo of my suitcase as my lock screen wallpaper. So I don't have to stand there unlocking the phone, finding the Photos app, finding the right photo. I can just pull up my lock screen, make sure the screen's on, and go, this is it. It simplifies it. It adds that one. It's taking away a few little steps that you don't need when time is of the essence, because I had about 2 hours to get a connecting flight. So you want to make sure that you remove as many little complications as you can. So yes, take a photo, put an AirTag in your suitcase, take a photo of it, set it as your lock screen wallpaper. You've got it there and then ready to go. I think that's a few fantastic tech life hacks for you as well, because sometimes you may not actually have assistance. So when I landed in Virginia 2 years ago, we actually didn't have assistance because it was quite late and they didn't turn up. So a member of the public helped us. And again, being able to quickly pull up that photo of the suitcase on my lock screen helped them to quickly find it. So it's small techie life hacks that I think make your travel experience a little bit simpler and a little bit less stressful, because it can be quite stressful.
So what I do, and I only go to Scotland and back, really, that's the height of my travel with flying. So I always print off my boarding pass when I book my flights, and it is EasyJet that I use. So when I book my flights with EasyJet, I print off a copy of my boarding pass. I put one in my handbag so that I can always, and I keep that beside my passport, so that when I go through the gate and everything, I can hand that over, no problem. But I also put a print copy into my backpack just in case that when I put my backpack up, or the cabin crew insist that I need to put it up the top. They don't normally, but just in case they do and I get separated, I've got an air tag in one of the pockets, and I've also got a print copy of my boarding pass so that at least my name and my details are on it if my bag did get moved by somebody or they accidentally grabbed it and walked off with it. So I do that, and I also have the boarding pass on my phone as well, but just in case voiceover goes belly up and I can't access it, I always have the paper version as well as the electronic version. And it might sound like a bit of an overkill, but trust me, when you're traveling, you've got to be prepared for every eventuality.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's quite a good idea. Again, I've not actually gone to the stage where I print my boarding pass. I've always kind of let the people do it at the airport, just because I have not got much confidence yet with kind of sorting out the tickets and stuff before I fly independently. I'm hoping to get there at some point, but it is certainly a stressful experience. And yeah, I've got an air tag in my hand luggage as well, because yeah, they might not put it with you in the seat, or they might ask you to put it in the overhead bins. And let me tell you, things move in them bins, including jackets. So you sometimes might want to use your Find My app to get the AirTag to beep when you're looking through the overhead bin to see if you can kind of pinpoint it better as to where in them overhead bins it might be. Because, you know, that's what happens with turbulence. Sometimes these things move. So that might also help you.
So there you go, Hubert's adventures with tech and travel. If anybody's got any wonderful life hacks like Hubert's, which I think are really very sound and useful tips, if anybody has those, you know where to get in touch with us at techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
How can technology make a difference in your life? Well, today we're chatting with Emmy Anstey to hear about her favorite gadgets and tools that she has used in the past and she's using right now to help make her life easier, and perhaps also talk a little bit about some things she would love to get her hands on in the future. Emmy, it is lovely having you on the show today.
Yeah, no, thanks for having a chat with me.
Well, Emmy, let's start with your sight condition and how much usable vision do you have?
So the genetic condition that I have is called Bardet-Biedl syndrome, but the actual visual part of it is retinitis pigmentosa, most people know it as like RP. So the main things of my vision is I've got very limited peripheral. So it's like about 2 or 3 degrees roughly, so like just past kind of the eye line of like seeing someone's face. So it's really, really small. No depth perception. And then I've got night blindness, colour blindness and light sensitivity. But in terms of like general day-to-day vision, I've got a fair chunk of like useful vision. So I probably don't use as much different technology or different things as people who've got like who got less sight or are like fully blind.
Yeah, but I guess sight loss, especially with vision, it's very much a spectrum. So it still impacts your life, and there's still some tech you have used growing up that helped you maybe access materials, study. Where is it that tech specifically helped you out as you were growing up?
It depends, like, what you define as tech. Do you mean, like, in terms of, like, digital technology or just general technology? If we're talking about, like, anything that could class as technology, then technically I started using it when I was, like, 7, when I first got introduced to my mobility technology, is when I started to use a cane. I was first taught how to use a guide cane, but also touch typing as well. They were the first, like, two things they thought would be most useful when I was, like, first diagnosed with my sight loss.
And how have they impacted your life since then? Like, did you notice a difference at that age? You were quite young.
Yeah, so the cane felt really strange, and it's going to sound strange saying this, but because I was like really young and it needed to feel more normal, canes ended up having names because it just made it a bit more fun for when I was younger. They don't now, but in terms of actual using it, it kind of made things obviously a lot easier. It was a bit strange having to learn to use it. And the more bigger kind of influence was the touch typing because it just felt like it made so much more sense than doing the handwriting practice. Like, I was actually going to use it in the future, and I quite enjoyed it as well.
So if someone's listening and they're maybe fairly new to sight loss, what is touch typing? Could you describe it or explain it, please?
So touch typing is basically where you're typing on a computer and you're typing on the keys, but you don't have to look at your hands while you're typing. You can just type really quickly without like having to be able to like see it or like look at where your fingers are placed. A lot of people, when they do it, they kind of learn like the home keys, so where you like put your fingers, so you can then find all the other keys and all the other like functions and stuff on the keyboard. I used something called Netty Fingers that had like loads of games and stuff on it to learn to type when I was a lot younger. And then I just kind of used it for all my lessons from about year 9 onwards.
And as you got older, did you ever use any of the overlays you can get for keyboards to make them a little bit more tactile? I know some keyboards are not, especially the newer ones, can feel a little bit less tactile.
I didn't necessarily have like anything over, like an overlay or anything. I did have bump ons. So I had two little round bump ons I stuck on the F and the J keys so I knew where they were.
So that made it easier to line up your hands and devices like phones or applications. Have you ever
So
used
in
anything like
terms of that,
that?
so when I was in like year 7, 8 at secondary school, I used a magnifier for anything they gave me kind of document wise. So I could take a photo of it and then like change the color of the text or enlarge it. But I could still write in like books and things. When I got to kind of the age of about 14, my vision changed again and I was really struggling to read my own handwriting, which is why I then got the laptop with Dolphin Supernova on it, which I then had to enlarge things on the laptop, make the cursor bigger in different colours so I could see that, and did all my work through that instead.
And are you still relying on your laptop for a lot of your work? How old are you right now?
So I'm 23 now. So I did my A-levels and I went to residential college.
And what helped you in college when it came to like doing your assignments and lessons? Did you do things on your laptop as well, or did you rely on any other devices?
So I did use my laptop for my actual lessons, but at the college I had lessons in digital and assistive technology. So it kind of helped me look into different software. So I've moved on to JAWS just because I found that easier. I found it works better with more the Microsoft apps like PowerPoint and Excel. And I also started to learn how to use a Q Braille as well because I've been learning Braille since I was about 11 and it could be beneficial in the future if my sight goes more. So I've kind of dabbled in Q Braille and a bit more bit of Braille technology.
You've mentioned quite a few devices you have used over the years. What accessible tech could you not live without?
I'd say the laptop's kind of one I've really depended on to like take notes and like do my A levels. There's going to probably be another one that's going to be really obscure. I'd say like talking thermometer and talking like scales that I've used in like the kitchen and cookery, like some of them I would not be able to cope without at college because they were so useful.
Are you a big chef? Do you like cooking?
Yeah, I actually did cookery at GCSE and A level, and then I was on self-catered through my 2 years at college.
And are you, what would be your signature dish?
That's a tough question. One of my favourites, and probably the one that people ask me to do the most, is like a quiche or like tartlets because I'm quite good at doing pastry.
That's really impressive because I find pastries are really difficult to get right.
Yeah, but it's by feel, so it's kind of easier. It's one of the ones I find easier because it's by feel.
And over the years, have you received any support when it came to accessible tech from maybe any community groups or any specific organizations?
I had support through like the VI team from the council when I was at school, and they kind of helped with a few tech issues I had with like my iPad and stuff at the time. But I guess then when I was at college, like I said, I was actually having lessons in accessible tech. But to be honest, if I ever have any tech issues, I'll either like try and look it up myself, or normally I get my dad to help because he's normally the IT guy in our family.
That's very convenient, isn't it?
Yeah.
When it comes to accessible technology, what would you absolutely recommend to someone who is perhaps new to sight loss?
Obviously, it changes for a lot of people. Like, I've seen people who like really get on with kind of software and people who kind of don't. So it really depends on, obviously, people with varying levels of sight. But I'd say using a laptop and being able to touch type massively helped with doing all my studies. Braille technology, I can't really advise that or recommend that much because I'm not really advanced enough with it. I know some of my friends really like the key Braille. But like I said, it's really hard to say because, like I said, vision varies so much.
Yeah, exactly. And there is no right answer. It's just something that's maybe from your personal experience in this case. Well, Emmy, just one final question for you. Obviously, technology is advancing so quickly. So if there was a dream development for you in the future, what would you like to see come to fruition?
I'd probably say something that's like a bit more advanced with Braille, because obviously you've got things like Key Braille or like the standard Brailler. So one that's like more kind of like a computer and Braille kind of mixed together would be quite cool. Also, I feel like if more kind of games or like video games and stuff could be made accessible and like be adapted, or like just have like a something that can adapt them like better anyway, because there's just so many games now that just aren't accessible.
And we're definitely seeing more people from the blind and partially sighted community get interested in games. So yeah, it seems like a really great market to invest in, doesn't it?
Yeah, just some people don't see that because it's such a niche thing to have like such a small community of people who are vision impaired or blind. So unfortunately, it's not being developed as much because there's not enough awareness out there about what it's like.
Well, hopefully as people like yourself talk more about it, we'll see even more investment go into gaming and accessibility. I mean, there are some games out there that are really paving the way for that, so hopefully all the other companies will follow suit. But in the meantime, Emmy, it has been fantastic speaking with you today, and thank you so much for sharing your journey with accessible technology with us.
Let's talk podcasts, apps now on RNIB Connect Radio, on Tech Talk, and you may be actually using one of them to listen to this particular demonstration. So the app I'll show you today, and believe me, there are many that offer various features, so much so that you sometimes wonder whether there's just too much choice. Well, I'm about to throw another one into the mix, and that is an app I've recently discovered called Castro, spelled C-A-S-T-R-O. And this app, in majority, works like any other podcast app, quite frankly. However, with one little feature, and that is basically trying to defeat the kind of point that you must listen to every single episode of every single podcast you are subscribed to. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's nice if you do, especially if it's RNIB Tech Talk, of course. But point is, we want an app that can easily help you to filter out the episodes from each podcast that you maybe not be so interested in listening to compared to others. And this app does that in quite a simple way, which I will show you today.
Castro. Stopping Braille screen input. Opening Castro. Castro. Q. Now playing.
So, we've got Castro open. So, it works in a simple fashion where you've got a few tabs.
Selected. Q tab. Button.
So, you've got your Q tab. The tabs aren't labelled out of 1 out of 5 or 2 out of 5, unfortunately. But, yeah, you can find them. So, Q, this is where the magic happens. So, as you will see, if we swipe to the right,
Inbox tab button,
you've got Inbox here. And this is where the new episodes of the podcasts you are subscribed to will land. And what you then do is go through them and decide whether you want to queue them up or whether you want to clear them. It's that simple. So what happens then is, if you decide to queue the episode, it will go into your queue. And all the episodes that go into your queue are then downloaded. The other episodes that you maybe don't want to listen to, they are not added to your queue. They are still available if you want to, but they are not downloaded. So only the episodes you queue that you actually want to listen to will be downloaded, which I think is really good because then you can have a look at each episode. You can listen to the description and you can go, yeah, I'm interested in that one, or nah, not my thing. So you've got that choice, and I think that's pretty decent. So let me show you how this works. Let's go to my inbox.
Brits Abroad. TalkSport Daily 29 Minutes. Published today. Ollie Clink and former Marseille and Nancy striker Tony Cascarino take a look at why more British footballers than ever before are choosing to play abroad. They examine how life off the pitch shapes their game, drawing on insights from Cascarino's time in France. From embracing new cultures and lifestyles to overcoming unique challenges, they explore the transformative impact of playing overseas.
There we go, that's enough of that. So, this is a podcast episode from one of my podcasts. I can now swipe up or down with one finger to see what I want to do with this episode. I'm going to swipe up with one finger.
Drag item. Clear.
Twice. Double tap.
Following on. Assessing Shubman Gill's first series as India captain in the future of the WTC. Following on 30 minutes. Published today.
There we go. I like the sound of that, so I will swipe down with one finger.
Play. Cue next.
Double tap.
Talk Sport hit.
And that is simply how it works. It is as simple as that. So you've got your inbox, you've got your queue. They are the two parts you're probably going to be visiting most often. But you also have...
Library tab button.
But you also have your library where you can access the podcasts you are subscribed to. And this is where you can look at all the episodes of the podcasts you are subscribed to, regardless of whether they are in your inbox or in your queue. You can go back to them. So it's not like they are lost forever. You can go back to them. But the point is, you can much easier simplify your podcast listening and only focus on the episodes you actually want with the queue and inbox features. You also have...
Explore tab button.
The Explore tab, where you search for podcasts. You can either search for them, you can look at charts. So simple, fairly self-explanatory.
Show now play.
And that is all for the tabs. Now, you do have, obviously, the settings section. I will briefly show you that. Now, there is quite a lot of settings here, and I will show you some of them that I'm particularly in favour of. I'll take you through them, but not going to go into detail.
Settings. Castro Plus. Sync. Button.
So you've got the sync options. Now, the reason I'm going to point this out is this. As a premium user, you can sync across multiple devices. From my observation, currently, this doesn't work reliably in terms of queued episodes and the inbox. So the library tab syncs perfectly fine onto my iPad, but the queue and the inbox do not. I don't know if this is my personal issue or if it's an issue with the app in general, hence why I'm pointing it out as a precaution, but I'm not saying it's an issue with the app because I'm currently in conversations with the developer as to what the issue could be to see if they can assist. And they've been very responsive so far to try and identify what it is, because I did mention that I really like this app and I would love this to be fixed, because that way that would improve my podcast listening quite considerably.
App icon button. Watch sync button.
Watch sync, you can use the app. And what I like on the watch as well, if you get notifications from Castro on the watch, from the watch you can queue up episodes or clear them as well, and it will reflect on your queue. Well, at least on the phone it will anyway.
Show settings button.
Show settings. I love this section incredibly because you can adjust settings, general settings for shows, but you can also adjust the settings per show as well. And these could be, you know, speeds for each show, or how many episodes are kept at most in the queue or in the inbox. It's really useful to kind of narrow down, you know, certain shows, like certain podcasts that are not music podcasts. I keep the speed at default, but spoken podcasts, I ramp up to 2x speed just because that's how I like it.
Chapters button.
They've got chapter settings. I love podcast chapters. That's quite useful. If the podcasts support them, it's going to massively help to kind of skip the sections you may not be interested in.
Sideloads button. Promoted content button. Siri guide button. Shortcut Siri guide button.
You can use the app with Siri in ways. I haven't really used it with Siri. I don't really plan to, but that is an option.
Shortcuts gallery button.
There are shortcuts that can... There's a shortcut, for example, that can sync your Apple Podcast subscriptions with your Castro. I've tried it. It keeps bringing up an error, so I'm not sure what the reason is for that.
Appearance button. Notifications button.
Notifications. You can either receive notifications about certain shows when they get new episodes or all your shows. I prefer all of them because then I can quickly look at it and go, I want this episode, put it in the queue. I don't want it, clear it, and I might go back to it at some point.
Downloads button.
Then downloads, you can be as strict as you like. I kind of only have the queued episodes downloaded, nothing else. And you can also set limits as to how many hours of downloaded episodes per show or per podcast in general are kept on your device as well for storage optimization.
Advanced button.
Then the advanced settings, all the nitty-gritty stuff I've not touched yet, but I may at some point.
Rate us on the App Store. Follow us on.
Then you've got ratings and social media pages, and that's pretty much it. So, in a snapshot, that is Castro. I really like the concept because I don't listen to every single episode of every single podcast. There are some podcasts that are an exception, and I will listen to every single episode, but simply not all of them. So, that app allows you to control that in a bit more of a fine fashion. So if you like that sort of concept and you don't listen to every single episode of every podcast, apart from R&IB Tech Talk, then you may want to give Castro a try. It is also available on Android, so you can enjoy it. It is available on iPhone and iPad as well, so plenty of devices. Give it a go. Let us know what you think. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And just like that, we have reached the end of another Tech Talk. Thank you very much for your company. I hope you've enjoyed the show. And as always, if you've got any questions, suggestions, or in fact, you've got some tech news to share with us, or you want to show off a piece of technology that makes a difference for you, well, you can let us know all of that. And it's quite simple. It's the usual email address. It's techtalk@rnib.org.uk to get in touch with us. And yes, we will look at your emails and we will chat about them too. But for now, from myself, Hubert Pavelkovich, and Jackie Brown, goodbye.
Bye.